This podcast is on red alert for terrorist threat. Please adjust your seat.
Hello and welcome to the show. Colourful conversations with Clergyman Pete and Businessman Mark. Now, this is why there's still too much terrorism. Remarkably, we're seeing more terrorism unfold in the communities. Recently in America, Stephen Paddock is another man guilty of maiming hundreds of people in the United States of America. Why? Well, we're still not clear. And yet, we see also that there is terrorism going on in other parts of the world. Whether that's in Iraq, whether it's in Iran, and in many other places in the Middle East, in fact, all over the world, what is going on? Clergyman Pete, please tell us, what are the real reasons why we're still seeing terrorism unfold in our communities today?
Look, I'm going to summarize what the Mark and Pete view is then on why there is still so much terrorism around. And then we can unpack it as we go through this episode. The reasons, really, we can summarize as being naivety, cowardice, and outright collusion and support. So those are the three areas. And because of that, it's difficult to eradicate terrorism, even though there's a broad consensus that it's a bad thing. You know, generally speaking, people in positions of power, elected governments, people who are influencers in their communities, say and I think believe that terrorism is a bad thing, but they don't in the end eradicate it. And the reason that they don't are those reasons that I outlined: naivety, there's cowardice, and then there's outright collusion and support. We can look at each of those areas and look at different examples, but I believe that is the issue. And until we manage to address those three areas, we're going to keep having terrorism. And maybe we are just going to have to get used to it.
Yes, but I guess that one of the reasons why so much terrorism is happening is because we're getting rogue individuals now who are actually going about society seemingly being like a normal citizen and then turning into some mass terrorist. I mean, somebody like Stephen Paddock, who was known as a retired accountant, yes, he gambled a little bit in Las Vegas, and then suddenly maimed down 58 people and injured hundreds. Now, this in itself is almost impossible to try and actually prevent, particularly when you get individuals, not just in America, but of course in Europe and other parts of the world. It made me think, and I'm just wondering, well, here's a little thought, which is lamb to the slaughter. Bar, bar, black sheep, banished to isolation. Yes, sir, pending arbitration. Now, who now is master to point out the blame? And boy, are you guilty, wrapped up in shame. Boo-hoo, black sheep, is your head packed with wool? Yes, sir, it's served with several bags full. Black sheep, you are the sacrificial lamb. When will you reveal your next little scam? The family don't want you. You've corrupted all the crop. Bleating too much terrorism. Now you are for the chop. So it's time to take action, and we now need to start putting measures in place that not only prevent groups from actually committing these atrocities, but individuals. So, Clergyman Pete, how do we stop individuals, let alone groups?
Okay, here we're starting with one of the areas alluded to right at the start. When we talk about combating individuals turning in most cases, by far the majority of cases around the world, to the ideology known as Islam. But it's not exclusively that, of course. There are other ideologies which can lead to terrorist activities, you know, including the one which left-wing politicians love to highlight, which is white supremacism. White supremacists are few in number, but are going to become more dominant if we don't combat terrorism from people who are Islamic, because although Islam is a religion, it's associated in people's minds with certain ethnicities. But just taking a look at how you combat it, well, first you've got to combat naivety. You've got to combat the misunderstanding of why people carry out these attacks. Now, if you, I'm just going to conflate several people together just to make it, just for time's sake. If you ignoring Stephen Paddock in the recent killer in Las Vegas, because we don't have enough facts available, that's still being investigated, and it's a little bit confusing as to even exactly what happened at this stage. So, although I'm sure in some way he's going to fit into this, we can't really talk about it because we haven't got enough of the facts. But if you take the classic example of someone who seemingly very pleasant, enjoys having a drink with his mates and suddenly kills people as an Islamic terrorist. Why has he done that? Well, because he actually believes it. This is the key thing. The naive response is to say, well, why would he want to kill other people? He wouldn't want to do that. Well, he would if this was his only way to save himself, which is standard Islamic belief that the only way to be sure that you are saved, you're not going to go to meet your a bad fate at judgment day after death, is to kill the infidel, is to be killed in a violent war in defense of Islam and its ideals. And if you're killed in that way, then you're going to go straight to paradise. And they become convinced of it, carry out attacks in which they expect to die, preferably being killed by security forces or armed forces. And that's where that fits exactly the MO of many of these different attacks that have been by people who are supposedly self-radicalized, as they call it. These are people who simply choose to believe in Islam and believe what it teaches them in the Quran and the Hadith. Why can't you believe a religion? And why can't people see, rather, that people do actually believe this stuff? Now, okay, there are other belief systems, as I said, which take people over, but as Islam is by far the majority, you're using that as an example there of how it happens. People actually believe what they say they believe. I know it's not what a liberal professor in a university, a psychiatry or social studies department believes, but that doesn't mean it's not true. It's just the case that people really believe this stuff. They believe, in that case, that they need to kill these people, that they are justified in doing so. If you take it to a white supremacist, say, for example, however, that Stephen Paddock is an anti-Republican, anti-Trump terrorist, which some people have promulgated as a possible motive. Well, then the reason he does it is he genuinely believes, maybe because of left-wing rhetoric for people like Hillary Clinton, that people who like country music are obviously right-wing hillbillies who support Trump, and so he is right to kill them. And so the people, even though they are mistaken, truly believe it. So that's the first thing. Get rid of your naivety that people cannot believe things that you disagree with. No, they can, and they do. And we would say they're wrong about all right-thinking people would say, no, terrorism is always wrong. But that doesn't stop the case that they do believe it. Now, once you accept that, you can start to combat it more effectively. In terms of Islam, people need to convert from Islam either to a different religion. I would recommend Christianity, or to a liberal form of Islam in which such activities are frowned upon. Liberal Islam, conforms in Western countries to Western ways of thinking, Western ways of living, and certainly would not support jihad as being in any way violent. So it's the way to combat this is at a belief level.
Yes. Well, that may be true, but it doesn't get away from the fact that you do have these black sheep, as I alluded to. Now, even as we've seen in London, we've seen in Paris, with Berlin, and in many other places. In fact, as we know, atrocities have been occurred because rogue individuals, for some reason, and it's not always because of religious reasons, have decided to perhaps take some kind of revenge on communities for something that's bad that's happened in their lives. Now, when I say bad, that could be because, as you've alluded to, maybe that they've been groomed in some way, possibly by certain quarters, or maybe that they've just lost all sense of reason. And this question or this point that we're making, that, you know, why is it that essentially that terrorism is still occurring? I think there's a fundamental thing going on here that, yes, there is a misunderstanding. I think in certain societies, there is a number of communities that just simply can't cope with the influx of certain people. Germany is a classic example. Over a million migrants coming into a country that that just simply are still struggling to know what to do with these people. Whilst on the one hand, there's a humanitarian outreach to say, we'll take you away from war, from places where your family is at risk. But I think that on the other hand, they just haven't thought it through. They haven't thought the journey through. And so what we're seeing here is I think that governments throughout society are failing citizens by putting in naive politicians who just simply do not understand what is required to integrate people better. I don't think it's necessarily that people have a problem that you may have a different religion. So you may be a Christian, you may be a Muslim, you may be a Sikh, and so on. I think it's the fact that people often, from my experience, and I've sort of lived in the Middle East, I've lived in Europe, and I've worked in America, and I know that one of the biggest problems is that when you ask a question of someone and says, what do you think about, now let's say, for example, you ask a European about, say, somebody in the Middle East, and vice versa, the answer that comes back doesn't, in my opinion, reflect reality. I think people work to stereotypes. I think there's a miscommunication, a misunderstanding. There's propaganda as well, where I certainly know in the Middle East, people will play and prey on your mind in the way that they'll say that Islam, for example, is a better religion because it doesn't promote certain things that go on in the Western society. One of the things that they certainly know when I lived in the Middle East, they talked about teenage pregnancies, they talk about alcohol abuse, drug abuse, and so on. It's true. There are those examples, but it's distorted, and it's the distortion.
Yeah.
But I would come back to the other way, simply saying that all people from, say, for example, if you ask people in the Western community, they'll say that the Middle East are uncaring and they don't look after their families. Quite the opposite. It's actually quite, from my experience, is that I've mentioned this on previous shows, that actually one of the most successful regions that I think that values tradition, values the investment in families, the respect for their elders, etc. I mean, it's embedded in their culture, and I see that as a good thing. I don't see that strength enough in the European communities. So for me, one of the reasons why we tend to sort of see these sort of lone wolves, these black sheep that come from communities, is because something has happened to them somewhere in their lives, and they are, to your point, they are ignorant. They've become ignorant, and they have their outlook on society has distorted. Yes. And I think this is getting to the core of why I think we're seeing all these things happen.
Yes, and so that's really the naivety is twofold. One is a lack of understanding of the possibility of people who actually believe religion, and also a lack of understanding of how others might view our society and how people become alienated. That's naivety. And we need to get over that if we're going to start combating it really and genuinely, getting to know people, bringing communities together and understanding what they actually believe. That's the only way forward. But in terms of combating that level of naivety and lack of understanding of motivation of why you commit a terrorist act. But there are the other two areas. There's the collusion, if you want to deal with that next. There is collusion. In the level of, let's take a few areas, mainly left-wing politics is involved in violence these days simply because of numbers, is what I'm saying. I'm sure, I mean, right-wing politics has its violent elements as well. At the moment, there happen to be more who are on the left wing are thinking of Antifa, the anti-fascist movement across America, which has a similar people, similar movements within Europe, and Black Lives Matter over in America. These groups commit violent acts. You see them. You can see the results. There were videos taken. You can see them actually calling for the death of policemen in the terms of Black Lives Matter, calling for the death of anyone they think is a Nazi in the terms of Antifa. Now, they will collude with extremists from Islamic background. Going back many years, this has been true of left-wing movements, including the Weatherman terrorist group of the 1970s, which, of course, you know, was behind the groups that Barack Obama was involved with. Now, there's that level of collusion that you have left-wing politicians and pressure groups colluding with Islam, partly for a fear of being called racist if they don't include them, but also at a strategic level, trying to have an effect on Western society in disturbing, disrupting Western society is the aim of both fundamentalist Muslims and extreme left-wing movements. And so they collude together. So that's the second strand of it. As to outright support, well, we've got to go to places like Qatar and Saudi Arabia and Iran, really, to see that. Unless people are right in their claims that some terrorist acts are actually false flags and done by Western governments. I personally can't see that there's evidence for that, but that is a strong belief by certain people, including the recent attack in Las Vegas.
Yes. Well, I think that talking about you talk about different countries, I mean, one of the things certainly in the Middle East that came up fairly recently, and it's still on the agenda today, and I'm surprised that it hasn't really been forced through more, where certain countries have been accused of effectively funding terrorism. Now, this was something that was leveraged at Qatar because they had seen, or at least there were some accusations that they were still funding terrorist groups, ISIS being one and many others. And one of the, even a lot of the other Middle East countries have started to effectively put embargoes in place. Now, this is quite serious in the sense that, you know, we as a European nation, for example, you know, have witnessed sadly many terrorist incidents, and one of the concerns is that we've seen that actually some of the terrorism is actually coming from our own communities because they've been here a long time and they've just been groomed. When you then have the situation where potentially the other nations are funding these groups, this is where I think the governments need to be stronger, because I don't think that that we're being strong enough with certain nations. Now, what that could mean is it could mean a trade embargo on certain countries. It could even mean, ironically, in certain situations where we might have to take some kind of military action. We've seen that in the past. We've seen that in Afghanistan. We've seen that in Iraq over two wars. And there's still factions going on at this moment in time. I think that one of the things that I think is pretty clear is we don't know enough. From as a public, we don't know enough about what's going on. And I think a lot of the public, if I talk to people in business, for example, they just want to trade. They just want to be able to trade, do business, do good for society, and that's it. But some countries, particularly the United States, are not allowed to trade in certain countries like Iran, because there's effectively a blanket embargo on American companies working for those type of nations. And that in itself is a shame, because I think that the countries themselves need to work harder at integrating. We're now in the 21st century. The days when it was the them and us situation where we could just simply trade amongst ourselves, I know, are long gone. I know globalization is criticized a great deal, but we're in a world where, you know, we can trade quite successfully from our bedrooms. We can quite successfully trade anywhere in the world. We've got to rethink and redraw our landscapes. I'm not saying that you shouldn't you know, abandon your culture and abandon your language. But I think we've got to take a different view on the way that we tend to sort of see the world. And most importantly now, the word respect and integrity, strange enough, is overused, but does not seem to apply. Now, ironically, this comes down to different things. We're seeing cultures such as the Middle East starting to change. They're starting to open up. I mean, here's a simple one. It's not necessarily to do with terrorism, but it is a change of attitude that people in places like Saudi Arabia have been pretty much restricted by government and policy. We're seeing the attitudes to women are changing. They're now, for the first time, going to allow women to drive. Now, the very thought of that ever happening 2 or 3 years ago was almost unimplausible. It could never happen. And I think that what they're realizing is that actually they've got to rethink things. It just by simply allowing women to drive doesn't mean to see they lose control. And a better understanding of what we're about. I think that what we're going to see over the next couple of years, we're still going to see more of these lone wolves, these black sheep appearing. But what I do think is, it's either going to go one of two ways. We're either going to have to shut up shop and just basically not allow people to travel in the same way that Donald Trump has put embargoes on certain people not traveling from certain countries to the United States. Britain could do the same in a couple of
years.
It
would be a short term, I'd say, yeah.
Could do. Mm-hmm. It could do. I don't think that's the right answer. I think education is one way, and I think that governments need to start thinking about how they allow people to practice what they believe in, for example, their own religions, and not be frightened about the fact that maybe somebody has a different view. Just because you have somebody who works with you as a colleague who might be a Muslim or a Christian or a Sikh or a Hindu or so on, why should that worry you? As an individual, if you have a strong belief in your religion, why should you believe that you have to kill the person opposite you? Why should that happen?
Yes. Well, I mean, of course, the one reason would be, just to answer that question, why should that be? Because that's what Islam teaches. But having said that, you know, I had friends, have friends who are devout Muslims. And they haven't tried to kill me. It is still possible to talk about these things as long as this is the final of the three parts of the problem as to why we keep having terrorism. Yes, there's naivety. Yes, there's the collusion. But then there's cowardice. Yes, someone might actually think I'm going to act on this injunction in my belief system and kill you. They probably won't, but they might. Okay, but what has happened is people have run scared, particularly of Islam. Now, in the past, it's been other belief systems. At the moment, we've had to mention Islam quite a bit because that is the one that at the moment is causing the most deaths and the one who people are most scared of. Now, so just in closing, I just want to say, stop being so scared. But no, it's more than that. It's not stop being scared. It's stop being such a bunch of cowards. You've got to be able to talk things through, as Mark was just saying. Yeah, I'm talking to you, gentle listener. You and, leaders and thought leaders in society, politicians, need to be able to criticise Islam. Yes, they need to be able to actually speak out when Islam is at fault. When it's not at fault, then praise it. But being prepared to criticise. Hey, I just wanted to finish this point by a quote from a book I read some time ago called Islamophilia by Douglas Murray, journalist, of course, and columnist, who comments on the problems with Islamic intrusion into Western society and the problems there. And he spent time in the various areas that he makes comments on. I think he speaks intelligently. But the point, this was a little story that he told, which highlights this problem of cowardice. It's a small story which illustrates the big problem. He says this: there was an atheist society at a British university's Freshers' Fair. And they decided to pin the name Muhammad to a pineapple. on their stool. And he said, it's worth stating that Muhammad almost certainly looked nothing like a pineapple. I think that's true. Nevertheless, the incident led the local Muslim Student Society to brand the student and the pineapple itself as Islamophobic. And the atheists, it was part of the Atheist Society, remember, were issued with an unimprovable line. This, from the Muslim student, he said, either the pineapple goes or you do. That was supported by those running the British universities. Precious Fair, I won't say which one it was. That was taken from Islamophilia. And that is the problem, the cowardice, the giving way to Muslims because Muslims kill people. That is what we call the bigotry of low expectations. Muslims are not worse than other people. They're perfectly capable of not killing you. It's worth taking the risk, because that's the only way we're going to improve things. By confronting the problems within Islam, we can show proper care and love for Muslims themselves.
Well, what a great way to end. So, listeners, what do you think about this? It's an emotive subject. Why do you think that terrorism is still occurring in society? Why not let us know? Log on to www.markandpete and let us know your thoughts. Follow us at Mark and Pete on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. So thank you for joining our show, and join us again next time for colourful conversations with Mark and Pete.